from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, correction. Here at the Le Show Dome, first of all, a couple weeks ago, noting the ironic nature of a radio station calling itself independent, your independent music station here in Los Angeles, whence this broadcast originates. When I said it was owned by Clear Channel, the largest owner of radio stations in the known universe, just thought that was an ironic little twist. Like first 6 minutes of the show not being aired on our home station last week with no warning or nothing. But don't get me started on that. Anyway, I'm told that by an employee or a programmer for said station, independent music radio here in Los Angeles, once this show originates, that in fact I was wrong. Clear Channel doesn't own it. Clear Channel, it's owned by somebody else, little company. Clear Channel merely handles the advertising sales for the station. So, aside from the fact that Clear Channel has a finger on the revenue windpipe of the station, it is indeed independent. You know, if they wanted to, sell seeds to pay the staff, why they wouldn't need Clear Channel at all. Totally independent. It's as if the United States, when we declared our independence from Britain, said, yeah, but we'll still want that tea tax for our, pay for the post office and stuff. Just noted, no comment, leaving church Easter Sunday morning, President Bush gave a short news conference and, at least to my eye, was wearing two flag pins, one below the other. So that's now the new standard. One flag pin, you're not patriotic enough. You got to have two. Same flag, apparently. There was a little something gold to the left of it. I couldn't see what it was. But two flag pins now, ladies and gentlemen. De rigueur. We're toughening up. There's our answer to Fallujah. Two flag pins. And finally, just putting feet to the fire, has anybody in the last 3 weeks followed up on whatever happened to the high-value target that the Pakistani army had surrounded in northwest Pakistan? There were those who said in the Washington Post, among other places, that they can't be making this announcement without being pretty sure they're going to capture the guy. Otherwise, it would totally shred the Pakistani government's credibility. No idea what happened to... there was the initial story that he had escaped through a tunnel. Whoever he was. It turned out to be an Uzbek, maybe. But no follow-up as to whether he, in fact, did escape. I feel confident that in days to come, Pakistani President Musharraf, to rebuild his credibility, will be wearing two flag pins. Hello, welcome to the show. Can you hear us now? Good.
When our love was young, and in your arms you kept me safely from the storm. But then a rain of doubt poured down on me, drowning the love we had. And with pain and woe you left me standing cold and dead. But if I the nights are long and lonely without you by my side. But like the moon. But if I could ever get a second chance, I know we'd make it. A stronger love this time, our hearts are mine, just won't forsake it. I'll never get by without your love. Now believe it, darling. I'll never get by without your love. I just can't get by, I just won't get by. I will never, never, never get by, no. No, I'll never get by without your love.
from the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, from the radio station that takes 6 minutes to figure out how to get its own show on the air. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to another edition of the show. I guess we're all on. It's 12 minutes in. Everybody's figured out how to get it. So let's start with it. Just in honor of the fact that when I flew back into Southern California someday this week, Thursday, an airline, nameless, begins with a U, ends with a D, thought that it would be a good idea to send the baggage down instead of to its normal carousels, where its flights come, to one carousel in a terminal where all the other carousels had been deactivated and was sharing the carousel with another airline, which had three flights that were just coming in. So five flights coming in on one carousel. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, you'd have had more room and privacy on a New York subway at rush hour. So in honor of that, tales of airport security. Ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Not that that's a security matter. My particular room. But this is. Dear Harry, writes Tom of Chicago. Not the toothpaste Tom. He's of Tom of Maine. This is Tom of Chicago. Dear Harry, on a recent Chicago to Dallas flight, the formerly touted concept of hardened cockpit doors was seriously challenged. We were perhaps 15 minutes from landing at Dallas-Fort Worth Airport. Everyone and everything was stowed and upright, including a flight attendant sitting in a jump seat just outside the cockpit door. A bit of turbulence shook the 737, enough to rattle some coffee cups in the galley. While reading in my seat near the front of coach, I noticed movement out of the corner of my eye. Glancing up, I saw the cockpit door lazily swinging open. I couldn't see the crew inside, but the flight attendant, visibly startled, sprung from her jump seat and with a "you didn't see that, did you?" glance at me, hastily pushed the cockpit door closed and retook her seat. We continued on without further incident. Tales of airport security, ladies and gentlemen, copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Why not? Let's start with the trivial. That's what we're doing, working our way up to the big stuff. With great fanfare on the eve of the millennium, the eternal flame of hope was lit in Birmingham, England. The eternal flame of hope. You got the premise? The $130,000 sculpture that houses the flame was donated by a coalition of local churches. The flame was sponsored by a smoke alarm company. Wait, there's more. The company has ended its support, leaving the city to pay the $22,000 yearly gas bill, which it refuses to do. It's not just the money, says Councilman Ian Ward. In a world where we're increasingly aware of greenhouse gases, we need to consider whether burning 12,000 pounds of gas every year is a responsible attitude toward the environment. He suggests a flame-like electric light would be better. But right now, the eternal flame of hope, ladies and gentlemen, has been doused. For your listening pleasure. New American Library's sudden decision to drop its plans to reissue Lynn Cheney's torrid tale of lesbian love in the Wild West, after the vice president's wife expressed her objection, was business as usual for the publishing house, says Liz Pearl, vice president and executive director of publicity. It's been done before. We try to honor our author's wishes. She could not say why Cheney had not been notified of the company's decision to resurrect the long out-of-print title. What's the title again? It hasn't said here. We'll get to it. The author found out about it from the media. Well, somebody in the White House reads the papers. Nor could she comment on why it had apparently never occurred to the publisher that the prominent conservative and wife of the vice president might not be pleased to have her steamy proto-feminist romance novel brought back into the spotlight. All it took, though, was a friendly phone call from Cheney's high-powered lawyer to convince New American Library to cancel abruptly the reissue, here we go, of the 1981 novel Sisters. Lynn Cheney's Sisters. But they're more than sisters. I think that the publisher respects the lawyer, Robert Barnett, and respects his opinion. It was all very friendly. He's been wonderful to work with, and he was completely above board, and we felt that he made his case. Barnett described his dealings with New American Library in equally warm terms, saying the company could not have been more considerate or professional. They both agree there was never any threat of legal action. Cheney might not have had any legal recourse anyway, though the book had been out of print for more than 2 decades. The rights had never reverted back to the author. The book was published so long ago, 1981. There are no records to show how well it sold. Makes it sound prehistoric, doesn't it, 1981? Reagan was president. Well, she added that New American Library did not have big hopes for the revived edition. I don't think you were going to see it on the bestseller list, the publicist said. That's a good publicist, talking down the sales expectations of a book they were going to publish. The author's Cheney spokesperson, Natalie Rule, said the author's objections had nothing to do with politics. Mrs. Cheney just... I'm sorry. I was thinking of something else. Quote, Mrs. Cheney just doesn't think it represents her best efforts as a writer, her spokesperson said. Reason enough, ladies and gentlemen, to stop publishing about 4/5 of the books on the market today. Okay, a couple more trivialities, and then, oh boy, fasten your seatbelts. A report in the British newspaper The Guardian this week described how this, ladies and gentlemen, you tell me, is this an indictment of socialized medicine or of privatization? A report in the British newspaper The Guardian this week described how 17,500 television sets were installed in hospitals without off switches by Patientline, a company chaired by Derek Lewis, who was former director general of the prison service. Patients had to watch, starting when the service came on automatically at 6 or 7 a.m. until it ended at 10 p.m. Those not wanting to pay $5 a day for cable TV got hospital service messages all day long instead. Lewis gave assurances that a second-generation system, you see, second-generation system, with an off switch, that's what makes it second generation, was installed in more than 80 of the hospitals. But readers of The Guardian with experience of the new system say the switches don't work. Lewis later said the software was normally set up to allow the off switch to work only at night when the service finished anyway. Hospitals could change this if patients wanted to escape TV by day. But only 5 hospitals had done so, and the others, the off switch, you see, in the second-generation television system, the off switch had been turned off. Thank you so much. It's my pleasure. Try the veal. Okay, let's get serious. No, this can't be serious. An American newspaper has noticed a trend toward longer speeches by President Bush, is it? Yes, it is. Longer speeches. Man, the president, formerly known for pithy, almost blunt, two-fisted remarks, has now been noted giving speeches almost Clintonian in length. White House Communications Director Dan Bartlett says the trend is by design. The president's. Bush has told his schedulers and speechwriters to build in more time so he can walk audiences through the many really important things going on in our country and our role, in our world. Says Bartlett, he takes that role seriously as sort of educator-in-chief, unquote, the White House communications director, calling President Bush the educator-in-chief. Nothing more need be said, really, but there's more. Where's Saddam? Do you know? I do. He's in Qatar, whatever you call it. He ain't in Iraq anymore. You wouldn't know it from the American media. Saddam Hussein has been moved out of Iraq because of fears he would be rescued from American captivity by the current insurgency. He's being held, this is according to a British newspaper, The Evening Standard, he's being held on a U.S. airbase in Qatar, where he's being interrogated by the FBI and CIA. Such secrecy surrounded his move to the airbase on the outskirts of the capital, Doha, that the ruling royal family initially was not even told. Despite the move, he is not cooperating with interrogators and is said to give vague answers. He has repeated the Iraqi government's official, former Iraqi government's official position on the invasion of Kuwait, the United Nations sanctions, and the Iran-Iraq war without giving any extra insight. Some of the FBI interrogators who had hoped he would crack through techniques such as sleep deprivation, rapid changes of room temperature, and being offered rewards for cooperation have lost hope. Ooh, the eternal flame of hope has flickered out among the FBI interrogators. They have concluded he was so surrounded by sycophants, he had no real idea of what was happening in his country. Thank God we don't have a president like that. His former deputy prime minister and international envoy Tariq Aziz, being held at Baghdad airport, is being equally uncooperative. Pictures of this is from a French news agency. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. Pictures of body bags and U.S. soldiers praying around dead comrades are creeping into the American media coverage of Iraq. The mounting death toll and particularly events such as the mutilation of four contractors in the city of Fallujah have broken the taboo on showing U.S. victims, according to media experts. U.S. officials have sought since Vietnam to control media use of such images. Since the 1991 Gulf War, they have banned photographers from covering the return of military coffins to the U.S. Robert Thompson, director of the Center for the Study of Popular Television at Syracuse University, said events on the ground in Iraq had altered media coverage. American journalists and TV channels are probably a little less reluctant now to report some of the stuff in more detail and showing more pictures than they were before when there was all this national unity, he said. The killing of the contractors in Fallujah sort of eroded the taboo, he reported. Thompson believes the impact will only be serious if the flow of conflict pictures is prolonged. That can't possibly happen. Despite the fact that there have been claims that all this that's going on in Iraq is foreigners, British Foreign Secretary Jack Straw now admits that it's no longer possible to present the Iraqi uprising as the work primarily of foreign terrorists, but the work of ever larger numbers of Iraqis. That wording from the conservative British newspaper, The Telegraph. That's wording is from Jack Straw. It is plainly the fact today, this is a quote, that there are larger numbers of people, and they are people on the ground, Iraqis, not foreign fighters, who are engaged in this insurgency. Unquote, British Foreign Secretary Jack Straw. They're our allies, ladies and gentlemen. And yet, as we go into the Iraqi file for you, also outside the bubble, senior British commanders have condemned American military tactics in Iraq as heavy-handed and disproportionate. One senior army officer told British newspaper The Telegraph that America's aggressive methods were causing friction among allied commanders, and there was a growing sense of unease and frustration among the British high command. The officer insisted on anonymity, said part of the problem was that American troops viewed Iraqis as Untermenschen, the Nazi expression for subhumans. Speaking from his base in southern Iraq, this officer said, "My view and the view of the British chain of command is that the Americans' use of violence is not proportionate and is over-responsive to the threat they are facing. They don't see the Iraqi people the way we see them. They're not concerned about the Iraqi loss of life in the way the British are. Their attitude towards the Iraqis is tragic. It's awful." The U.S., continuing to quote this British commander in South Iraq, "The U.S. troops view things in very simplistic terms. It seems hard for them to reconcile subtleties between who supports what and who doesn't in Iraq. It's easier for their soldiers to group all Iraqis as the bad guys. As far as they're concerned, Iraq is bandit country, and everybody is out to kill them." Unquote. British rules of engagement only allow troops to open fire when attacked, using the minimum force necessary and only at identified targets. The American approach When U.S. troops are attacked with mortars in Baghdad, they use mortar-locating radar to find the firing point and then attack the general area with artillery, even though the area they're attacking may be in the middle of a densely populated residential area. They may well kill the terrorists in the barrage, but they will also kill and maim innocent civilians. That has been their response on a number of occasions. This, again, the British commander speaking. It is trite, but American troops do shoot first and ask questions later. They're very concerned about taking casualties and have even trained their guns on British troops, he says. He believes the Americans have now lost the military initiative in Iraq. The Americans will have to abandon the sledgehammer-to-crack-a-nut approach. It has failed, he said. They need to stop viewing every Iraqi as the enemy and attempt to win the hearts and minds of the people. Our objective is to create a stable, democratic, and safe Iraq. It's going to take up to 10 years, he concludes. Hey, I'm in. I'm in. I am so down with that. From ABC News Australia. This is a different ABC than our ABC. U.S. soldiers in Iraq are being asked to pray for President George W. Bush. Thousands of Marines have been given a pamphlet called, quote, A Christian's Duty, a mini prayer book which includes a tear-out section to be mailed to the White House, pledging the soldier who sends it in has been praying for Bush. I have committed to pray for you, your family, your staff, and our troops during this time of uncertainty and tumult. May God's peace be your guide, says the pledge. This is according to a journalist embedded with coalition forces, coalition of the wilting. Oh, they're still there. The pamphlet by a group called In Touch Ministries offers a daily prayer to be made for the U.S. president. Today's is, pray that the president and his advisors will seek God and his wisdom daily and not rely on their own understanding. Tomorrow's, pray that the president and his advisors will be strong and courageous to do what is right regardless of critics. Those tough U.S. tactics in Fallujah and southern Iraq are driving a wedge between Americans and not just the Brits, but the 25-member Iraqi Governing Council. One council member, angered by this week's heavy fighting in Fallujah, suspended his membership Friday. Four others say they are ready to follow suit. A sixth, Adnan Pachaki, less than 3 months ago, was Laura Bush's guest at the State of the Union address, criticized U.S. actions as, quote, illegal and totally unacceptable, unquote. Get him off of there. We don't need that. We got to turn over the sovereignty to somebody. You want to turn it over to him? I don't think so. All right, so is the ceasefire in Fallujah, why the ceasefire that we called in Fallujah? There is one report that the coalition ended its blockade in response to threats by insurgents to kill an American hostage. Why, that would mean we were giving in to... Yes, it would. Or that we were talking to terrorists. We don't negotiate with terrorists, do we? But here is another story which suggests that despite the stories that say Paul Bremer's shutdown of this Shiite cleric's newspaper was the proximate cause of the uprising, this from the Glasgow Sunday Herald, ladies and gentlemen. A secret meeting of senior Islamic activists held in London last month took the decision to stir the Iraqi Shiite resistance, which led to the major escalation of hostilities. Delegates with affiliations to militant Islamic groups across the Middle East, including many that are banned as terrorist organizations, traveled from all over Europe for the confidential closed-door sessions at various Islamic centers in central London. Sunnis, Shiites, representatives from Syria, the Gulf states, and Saudi Arabia. Hello, Saudi Arabia. Hello, Riyadh. They attended the conference. They agreed to avoid any armed clashes between Sunnis and Shiites after the June 30th handover. A source in Europe who asked not to be named said the secret debate and decision to move the Shiite front against the American occupation was the most prominent among the recommendations at the conference in March on 13th and 14th. The Home Office in Britain was asked if it was aware of the meeting. They wouldn't comment. Says the paper, it's highly unlikely that such a gathering would have gone unnoticed and unsupervised by Britain's intelligence agencies. That points to both the UK and US governments being aware in advance of the timing of a potential escalation of violence. And finally, at the top of the news, ladies and gentlemen, and I share this with you just because you may not be hearing it anywhere else. It's from a website run by reputedly former members of Israeli intelligence. On Friday, U.S.-led forces were thrown back to the point they had reached exactly 1 year ago. They were faced, according to this website's exclusive military and intelligence sources, with a row of devastating setbacks. Ministers were quitting the Iraqi Governing Council. Large parts of the new Iraqi Army, Police, Border Guard, Protective Units for Oil Installations and Intelligence, trained and financed by Washington, were breaking down. Some Iraqi units were handing their weapons and surrendering to the nearest insurgent militias. U.S. troops flowing from the first two situations, the U.S. troops were ordered to de-escalate military action and pull back from the major fronts of Baghdad's sprawling northern Shiite slum. This was the real background to the unilateral U.S. suspension of hostilities. Most surprisingly, American and Allied forces were stopped in their tracks not by a popular Iraqi revolution or a mighty army, but the spotty strike-and-scoot tactics of this radical militia. The tactics meticulously plotted by masterminds in Iran and Hezbollah. Okay, believe what you will, ladies and gentlemen. Everybody else does.
Something to make a man lay that money right in her hand. The very thing that makes her rich will make you poor. The very thing that makes her rich will make you poor. That's right. Behind the wheel of a 2¼, yes I did. Had you living like a rich man's daughter, yes I did. I showed it whilst you was living high on the hog. You had me down here scuffing like a dog.
This is Le Show. These damn Brits, ladies and gentlemen, they're so ungrateful. You know, we let them be our main partners in the coalition of the wilting. And first of all, they attack our tactics. Now, they're not happy that we shoot down their aircraft. Serious fault in an American missile system might have led to the shooting down of a British RAF Tornado during the Iraq conflict. The aircraft was destroyed by a Patriot missile as it came in to land in Kuwait, killing the two-man crew. A United States inquiry exonerated the operators of the Patriot missile battery, suggesting that the British aircraft was mistaken for an enemy missile because it failed to send a friend or foe signal. But an embedded American journalist with the Patriot unit disclosed that Allied aircraft appeared on the system's radar as incoming enemy missiles dozens of times a day. It's Robert Riggs, a reporter with a Texas TV station, said soldiers in the Patriot battery were told the British airmen were to blame for failing to switch on their friend or foe equipment. But what the Army never disclosed publicly at the time was that the Army Patriots were mistakenly identifying friendly aircraft as enemy tactical ballistic missiles. Identification errors had dogged the system for weeks before the friendly fire incident. He recalled one occasion when a tactical ballistic missile appeared on radar screens. An employee of Raytheon, the Patriots' builder, burst into the control room yelling, quote, "Don't shoot! Don't shoot!" The reporter said soldiers told him, "We just came close to shooting down a U.S. Navy F-18. An F-18 was shot down in a second friendly fire incident, April 2nd last year, when a Patriot was launched at what ground crew thought was an enemy missile near Karbala. Radar traces of aircraft, whether friend or foe, do not resemble missiles, according to an MIT expert. Philip Coyle, a U.S. Assistant Secretary of Defense for Testing and Evaluation, up till 3 years ago, said the Patriot system is designed to be pretty much automatic. These accidents have shown this is a problem with the Patriot system, not with pilot error, not with identification systems. He suggested U.S. reluctance to address systemic failures, well, we got those, was the result of a desire to protect opportunities for export orders. Okay, let's get to it. The presidential daily briefing, the 9/11 commission hearings, heard Condi Rice this week. Questioning revealed this August 6th briefing called Al-Qaeda Determined to Attack U.S. Inside U.S. John Ashcroft never saw that briefing, so that he couldn't follow up on the 70 FBI full field investigations that were reported in that briefing, because President George W. Bush had restricted the distribution of the presidential daily briefing to just 7 national security officials. This was new in his administration. July 12th, Ashcroft had been briefed by the temporary head of the FBI, Tom Picard, about the rising number of Al-Qaeda threats, but when Ashcroft inquired, "Do you have any information indicating a threat to the continental United States?" Picard responded, "No." The president is in Crawford, Texas this weekend, as he was when he got that presidential daily briefing back in August of 2001. His staff said at the time the biggest issue on his agenda was his decision on federal funding of stem cell research, followed by education, immigration, and the Social Security lockbox. Battle stations? A former Bush aide who remains close to the White House said the use of the term battle stations by Condoleezza Rice was an overstatement. He said some members of Bush's senior staff did not know the extent of the information he'd been given about the Al-Qaeda threat. In a pre-9/11 world, said this former aide, it was like, quote, "check it out and see what you find and get back to us after Labor Day," unquote. It wasn't just the president who was on vacation, he continued. It was the whole government. Condi Rice, at the 9/11 hearing, was asked this question by Democratic attack dog Richard Benveniste, and gave the following answer.
You acknowledged to us in your interview of February 7, 2004, that Richard Clark told you that Al-Qaeda cells were in the United States. Did you tell the president at any time prior to August 6th of the existence of al-Qaeda cells in the United States?
First, let me just make certain.
If you could just answer that question,
first,
because I only have a very limited.
I understand, Commissioner, but it's also important, Commissioner, that I address the other issues that you have raised. So I will do it quickly, but if you'll just give me a moment.
Well, my only question to you is whether you told the President.
Dick Clark had told me, I think in a memorandum, I remember it as being only a line or two, that there were al-Qaeda cells in the United States. Now, the question is, what did we need to do about that? And I also understood that that was what the FBI was doing, that the FBI was pursuing these al-Qaeda cells. I believe in the August 6th memorandum it says that there were 70 full field investigations underway of these cells. And so there was no recommendation that we do something about this. The FBI was pursuing it. I really don't remember, Commissioner, whether I discussed this with the President.
Thank you.
I remember very well that the President was aware that there were issues inside the United States. He talked to people about this, but I don't remember the al-Qaeda cells as being something that we were told we needed to do something about.
It was only a line or two. See, if it had been more lines, she might have remembered whether she told him or not. Because we were at battle stations, ladies and gentlemen. So why would you not remember? Why would you remember if you told the President of the United States that al-Qaeda had sleeper cells inside the country? The President this weekend at the Crawford Ranch, the administration sensitive to charges that he's loafing, although he's spending a week at the ranch with no public appearances, they released a photo of Bush meeting via teleconference with his national security advisors on Saturday. They didn't release photos of him that they took fishing with a crew from the Outdoor Life television network. They didn't release those pictures. He caught a 4-pound bass on Friday. And then he spent Easter Sunday in Crawford, among other things, attending church services down there with him, aside from his family, Condoleezza Rice. Now, the Condi had testified at the 9/11 commission that the that August 6th presidential daily briefing was mainly historical, neglecting to mention that the FBI did say there were suspicious activities consistent with hijacking going on at that moment. And there was some debate. A CIA person had told the commission that that briefing had been generated by a CIA official on his own. Condi Rice insisted it was generated by questions from the President. Anyway, they're down at Crawford attending Easter Sunday services.
The message is hope. That's what the Easter message always is.
No. Pretty good service, eh, Condi?
Yes, Mr. President. They brought us right down to the front, brought me an extra pillow. You couldn't really...
I mean the church service. This fella's really nailing it down. No figure of speech intended.
Very impressive.
Yeah.
When was this church built?
I think it was originally a Kmart. Church took it over in 98. So listen, kiddo, you've had a rough week, and you come through it like a champ.
Thank you, sir. You know, people keep saying how steely, almost mechanical I may have seemed in front of the commission.
Nah, you were strong. You know, you reminded me of my mom. You know, if she'd been, blessed with a big gap between her front teeth.
But I did have a couple of rough moments.
I'm sure you did. I watched it, and it made me cringe sometimes.
You know, when they kept talking about intel that would set your hair on fire, gave me shivers, took me back to when I was a kid.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Look, you know how sorry I am. We had to rush release this memo.
I know.
that's typical of the enemies of freedom. First we give them you, then they want the memo. Now they got the memo, you know. Next thing they'll need to have, you know, what I had for lunch that day.
I know.
It was pot roast.
I don't need to know that, sir.
No, it just sticks in your mind, you know. Pot roast in mid-August. I get sleepy enough after lunch, you know.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. I mean, declassifying the memo should have taken under normal procedures, another month?
Well, Carl said if we hadn't gotten it out over the holiday weekend, we'd be bailing water out of the poop deck. Maybe he said bailing poop out of the water deck, in any case you get the idea of what he was trying to get across on. Mm-hmm.
Just not the best thing for my consistency of message, you know, but obviously, whatever you think is best, sir.
Hey, look, if it was up to me, we wouldn't even be having a commission that we're so all-fired eager to cooperate with, but, you know, that's water over the bridge. But look, the memo was mainly historionic, and it was obviously sent to in answer to my specific questions. That's why I was so damn short. So, I mean, you know, there's your credibility right there.
I know, sir. It's just, when I hear that sentence about the FBI having evidence of suspicious activities consistent with preparations for hijacking, it just makes me want to yell at the top of my lungs to Bob Mueller, so why didn't you tell us to do something about it?
Yeah, I know. Look, you can't kick yourself for not yelling that. That day we caught a 4-pounder on Friday?
Mm-hmm. I was at the teleconference yesterday when you told Rumsfeld.
Yeah. Well, he didn't seem all that interested. Mm. But the guy from the Outdoor Network sure thought it was a big deal.
Well,
Carl thinks that's worth a couple of states right there. Let's see John Mr. Ketchup Eris catch a 4-pound bass off a cable channel's boat. With the cameras on him and using their bait.
The Reverend sounds tired.
Yeah, he does about 8 of these on Easter Day. Hey, look, I knew about the lynchings and stuff, but did they really set people's hair on fire back then? I mean, that man, that must have been horrible. Although I have read that the only part of the hair that's alive is the barnacle.
In the old beauty shops, the straightener they used would burn your hair.
Huh? Brother, it was always something, wasn't it? Other thing I was wondering, after watching your testimony, I started asking myself, did you ever tell me about sleeper cells in this country?
No, sir.
Okay. I'm off the hook on that one. Why not?
Beg pardon?
Why didn't you tell me about the sleeper cells?
The intelligence wasn't actionable. Nobody was telling us that we needed to do anything.
Yeah, of course. That's what I thought. I just wanted to be sure before we go to the commission, you know, to do our testification this week.
Janie knows this.
No, I know, but, you know, there's some of these questions I should just up and answer on my own, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely.
Do you think we got the teleconference back on the schedule for this afternoon? Because otherwise, I'll call the fishing guys.
Yes, sir. Just a little glitch. They were using the secure fiber line to feed American Idol to Baghdad for the troops. It's very important for their morale.
Gosh, yeah. I mean, good Lord, we don't want them having to watch Al Jazeera to find out who won. Anyway, kiddo, good job. They'll think twice before they ask for you again.
Thank you, sir.
Of course, I had to agree not to ask for you again, but you know what I mean.
Yes, sir.
Pot roast in August. I mean, where's the accountability?
I guess I'll have to change my plan. I should have realized there'd be another man. I overlooked that point completely until the big affair began. Before I knew where I was at, I found myself upon the shelf, and that was that. I tried to reach the moon, but when I got there, all that I could get was the air. My feet are back upon the ground. I've lost the one girl I've found. Yes, I'll have to change my plan. I should have realized there'd be another man. Why did I buy those blue pajamas before that big affair began? My boiling point is much too low for me to try to be a fly Lothario. I think I'll crawl right back and into my shell, dwelling in my personal hell. I'll have to change my plan around. I've lost the one girl I found. Yes, the one girl I found.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's almost time to get out of here. But before we do, lessons learned. You've heard that phrase this week. Ignored lessons from the past decade in the Balkans, Somalia, and Haiti, indicating the United States and its allies might need a significantly larger force to stabilize post-war Iraq. The earlier formula of success, 20 men per 1,000 inhabitants. In Iraq, 6 per 1,000. By the way, the former Army Chief of Staff who had pointed this out last April was asked to retire. Oh, I got to get one apology of the weekend. Oh, there's so many, but we had to... This was a big week. The History Channel has apologized to Lady Bird Johnson and her family for last year's documentary that implicated President LBJ in the assassination of President JFK. Our commitment is to historical accuracy, and in this case, we regrettably did not live up to our standards, says History Channel Chief Dan Davids. The History Channel said a panel of historians agreed that any implication that LBJ was involved in the assassination is entirely unfounded. If you can't get history on the History Channel, and you can't get news on the News Channel, and you can't get music videos on the Music Channel, what can you get and where? And where's that high-value target? Ladies and gentlemen, enough questions. That concludes this edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America on the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz, around the world via the Internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it, on your computer, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, and as a free download at audible.com/LeShow. And it'd be just like wearing three flag pins if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. Le Show playlists usually available at the newly refurbished harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.